And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Late night, midnight on the interstate. I didn't feel so great until I saw the city.
Welcome back to Straight from the Source with Michael Rousseau. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. My guest today, Gary Lawless, the great, great Gary Lawless, just a legend in the hockey writing and broadcasting community, was up in Winnipeg forever. I used to do his radio show up there all the time. He was a columnist up there for many, many, many years. We'll talk to him about that. But he got the dream job, the job I've always aspired to have. No, I'm just kidding, everybody. But actually, I'm kind of not. The dream job that I always aspired to have, the Vegas Golden Knights insider. He's also a color analyst, but went there when they were expansion team and has just done an amazing job helping build hockey with that market. And he's to have somebody with his pedigree be sort of the face and the voice of the Vegas Golden Knights. So it's just such a cool, cool thing for the fans of the Golden Knights. We'll talk to him a lot about his career, but also the Vegas team and how the heck the Wild just continually just beat this team. They did it again last night out of nowhere. The Wild rallied back from a 5-3 third period deficit. Kevin Fiala gets the goal midway through the period after just an incredible save by Cam Talbot on Alex Tuch. And how often do you see a big save on one end lead to a goal on the other end? But Victor Rasslead's an odd man rush, gets it back to Bonino, and Kevin Fiala follows up his own rebound attempt with just a great, great goal to pull them within a goal. And then again, out of nowhere, once again, Kirill Kaprizov ties the game, and who would have thought it? It doesn't even go to overtime. 26 seconds later, Jonas Brodin scores his career-high ninth goal to win the game in regulation. And the reason why that was huge is you don't give Vegas a point, and now Colorado comes back, beats San Jose in extra time, and now, all of a sudden, the Wild, actually, if they can win Wednesday night in regulation against Vegas, I mean, there is a chance the Wild play the Golden Knights in the playoffs. And so that's why I wanted to get Gary on. Plus, he's in town. So it's always fun to do a podcast with Gary. And then, as we're going to go do, have a nice Italian dinner right after this podcast. Trying to think what else about this this team right now. I mean, let's talk about Kevin Fiala. I mean, this guy is just absolutely on fire again, just like he was at the end of last season before the pandemic paused the season. But he has 6 goals, 13 points in his last 8 games. But it's just big goals every night, big plays every night. He usually has the primary assist on the tying goal or the winning goal if he's not the one scoring the big goal. And, You know, that's like last night he was again got back to some old habits of turning pucks over and things like that. But you can handle it when he always comes through in the clutch. And that's what's so great. Dare I say that he is a game breaker. Kevin Fiala is a game breaker. Paul Fenton was right. And he's just, man, it's just so fun to watch him play. And that's the difference with this Wild team is they've got guys up and down their lineup that can make plays. Guys like Kirill Kaprizov, who has now 24 goals. Last night, I believe, tied Filip Kuba's assist record as a rookie. So he's writing the record books from a rookie perspective. The other guy, again, is Joel Eriksson Ek. You know, 18 goals on the season on, like, I think anybody that listens to my podcast and has read me knows that how much I like Joel Eriksson Ek and think he's one of the great shutdown centers in this league. Never in my wildest imagination would I have thought that he'd be a goal scorer like this. I will say all the analytics people have been saying that his numbers have absolutely led to a guy that could bury these chances that he always gets. But what I just always thought is that he was what he was. He would get these unbelievable chances at the goal line and he just wouldn't put it in, or he'd hit the post or just go wide or he'd whiff. And now he is just burying these pucks, and not only burying pucks, but he's making like ridiculous plays, like the goal the other night against the St. Louis Blues, where he just, you know, tucks it back, circles around a defender, leaves Sokola in his dust, and scores an unbelievable highlight reel goal. So, man, it's just been fun watching this team. The other thing is they're getting goaltending. Now, I know Cam Talbot's leaked a little bit here lately. Not a little bit. He has given up 14 goals in his last three games. But again, just like Fiala, you can handle it when in the third period he's making save after save after save. And what does he do? Last night, I do think that he got a little rattled and probably lost his composure a little bit when he thought the first goal should have been disallowed for goalie interference. And I think that then, next thing you know, on a power play that he felt that the Vegas Golden Knights didn't earn, they score again, and I think it just got him off his game. But in the third period, when they most needed him, he makes big saves. He was absolutely flawless. And then on a late penalty kill, when Ian Cole put the puck in the stands, you know, what do the Wild do? They suck it up for their teammate. They protect him. You know, they make sure that Ian Cole, a great veteran, isn't the goat of the game by going out there and making saves. Joel Eriksson Ek and Jonas Brodin break up potential scoring chances. And then Cam Talbot, just look at the replay of the save he made on Alec Martinez. Just an extraordinary save. So just really cool to see this team right now and the way that they're coming together when it most matters, with five games left in the regular season, heading into a postseason. They're going to have a first round tough matchup, and they get by the first round, they're going to have a tough second round matchup where they're going to have to either in the first round or the second round go past Colorado or Vegas. While they're 17-2-1 in their last 20 at home, which is, again, you know, Ryan Hartman was saying the other day, like his first year here in Minnesota, how awful the Wild were at home. And I look back at that year and they were atrocious. They just lost game after game after game at home. And now they're just winning and making XL Energy Center a tough place to play again, which is why they're trying to get home ice advantage in the first round. They are 11-2-2 all time versus Vegas, have beaten the Vegas 5 in a row, 5-1-1 this season. So if the Wild can match up against the Vegas Golden Knights, at a minimum, it's going to be an entertaining series, because all seven games so far this season in the regular season have been very, very entertaining. Obviously, the playoffs are a different animal than the regular season. Vegas is playoff tested, but the Wild have a lot of playoff experience on their team as well, including two guys that won two cups in Ian Cole and Nick Bonino. Let's get to Gary Lawless, but I did want to just, you know, last week we talked about the tough story I wrote on Marco Rossi. Just a couple really things to point you to. You know, I'm nobody if I don't pimp The Athletic. And by the way, theathletic.com/straightfromthesource will get you in for $3.99 a month. But really today, so actually Tuesday when I'm recording this, I did a really cool story on Nico Sturm and his girlfriend, Taylor Turnquist. Taylor plays for the Boston Pride, was a high school star at Spring Lake Park. When she was at Spring Lake Park, she was a three-sport athlete there. And look at her, go out on Elite Prospects and look at her senior year there and how just absolutely dominant she was, at least statistically. Then she goes on to Clarkson, wins two Frozen Fours, NCAA championships, and then goes to the Boston Pride this year, her rookie year in the NWHL, and she wins a championship there. The Pride have asked her back, but it looks to me like she's going to sign with the Whitecaps, which will be pretty cool. So she may be close to Nico next year. Nico is actually living with her family while she's in Boston this year. But the other really neat part of the story is that Taylor teaches at the New England England Center for Children. She teaches autistic kids ages 6 to 12. Of course, I forget what I wrote in my story. Maybe, no, sorry, 12 to 16. She has 12 students, and just, you know, the respect and the inspiration that they each have for each other is really neat and is palpable in the story. So highly recommend you reading that story. And then on Friday, I'll be honest, I think all of you know how many tough stories I've written in my career. Friday's story was one of the hardest stories I've ever written. It's on Pierre Roscoe, the linesman who, if you follow me on Twitter, know that I have a big amount of respect for. He's also a good friend of mine, to be blunt and full disclosure. But he's retiring Saturday night, and I did a story on his career, but also his best friend, Stefan Provo, number 72, a linesman who I was also very, very close with. In 2005, he died during the NHL lockout in a motorcycle accident in Weston, Florida, right off State Road 84, there in Arvida Parkway. And man, it's just a tough story, and how Pierre has really devoted the rest of his career to one, Stefan's memory and his legacy, but also helping take care of Stefan's family. At the time, his daughters were 5 years old and 10 months old. And he started a fund that the NHL Officials Association have had annual poker tournaments to raise money for his two girls' education. Well, I talked to Ashley for the story, who turns 22 in a couple days. His other daughter, Steph's other daughter, Riley, is now 16. One of the funds, the fund has put Ashley fully through college and has raised enough money to put Riley through college. And so just kudos, one, to Pierre, but also to the NHL officials, the refs and the linesmen who have really supported this family. And now that money is going to continue on. It's going to go to other families, to help NHL officials and their families. Right now, money is going to Mick Magoo's family, the former longtime legendary referee. I laugh because he was just such a cartoon character, the way he used to skate around the ice. And we used to see him in XL Energy Center and places like up in Winnipeg and things like that, because he was an officiating manager after he retired from officiating. But it goes to two of his kids, Isaac and Carly. I talked to Carly for the story as well. They're two of his five kids are still in school at University of Regina. So I'm telling you, this story, you will weep, but you will be so heartwarmed. It is just it's just such a beautiful story. Every time I read it over and over again as it's going through the editing process, I'm just more and more proud of it. So I hope you read that. But without further ado, let's talk to just a character himself, Gary Lawless.
Well, Gary, it's nice to be here at the St. Paul Hotel. I haven't been here. It feels like all season, because usually I hang out at downtown, at XL Energy Center, and I hang out here all day. But you just can't do that this season because we're not allowed on the event level. So I haven't been down to this hotel really all season long.
Well, this is where we were
on
March 12th when the season was paused last year. And it was funny. I'll tell the story real quick. We had dinner at a place, at a different place. And then Vegas was in they were in the mix in the Pacific Division. There were important games going on that night. And we couldn't find a place that had the package because we wanted to watch, I think Edmonton was playing the night. We wanted to watch them play. So we went to Herbie's on the park, Herb Brooks restaurant.
Yep.
And while we were there, the news.
The NBA.
Of the NBA broke. And, I was with Shane Knighty, former player, and now our.
Former wild crate.
Yeah. Yeah. Played, and now our color analyst. And Dave Gosher, who's our TV analyst. And Dan Duva, who's my partner. He's our play-by-play guy on radio. And so I sent a text to somebody right away, and we were on this was the first game of a road trip, and we were supposed to be out for 4 or 5 days, so we all have about $500 of per diem in our pockets, and we were kind of waiting to see what happened, and then I got a text from somebody, and he said, "You're probably going back to Vegas tomorrow." None of this was official, but so we came back and sat in the St. Paul Grill, and I'll just describe it as this. None of us had any per diem left when we got on the plane. It was quite a night.
Now, did Bill Foley say, "Hey, I need $450 back"?
I never heard that, so and I hope he's not listening to this.
That is a great story. Yeah, that was just a crazy, crazy day. It really was. It's amazing when you think back to the beginning of the pandemic and canceling everything and all that, and now you're going through this type of season with guys testing positive all the time. Today, Kuznetsov in Washington, and it's just like you kind of look back now and you're like, man, if we knew then what we knew now, would they have just continued to truck on through? It'd be hard to do, but it's pretty unbelievable.
It has been, and I'll give the NHL credit. I think that they have, you know, made the right decisions based on the information that they had at the time. You know, you can second guess it after, but you can't second guess. I just think Bettman has done a brilliant job in, he's been nimble. He's put together, listened to a ton of people, made decisions when he's had to, hasn't rushed decisions, been really good in the moment. And then the long range work that he's done, when you think about it, he got the Stanley Cup off last year, got that new CBA done, and now he's done, you know, two huge TV deals that almost triple the league's television revenue in a
pandemic.
In a pandemic, and also in a time when the NFL is just soaking up so much money. Mm-hmm. You look at the NFL deals that they have done, it made it really hard, I think, for anybody else to operate in that space. And I mean, that's part of why NBC is no longer part of the picture. They invested so much in the NFL, and when they did it, they said we're going to have to make decisions, and they did. So good for Bettman and I'm really excited about Turner. I think that I enjoyed the hockey on NBC. Parts of it were brilliant. You know, obviously Doc and Ed, and I'm a big fan of John Forslund's work. I think Keith Jones in their studio. That's where it kind of changes for me, because I think Keith Jones, Catherine Tappan, Patrick Sharp, I think they could do a lot more than mm-hmm. they have done. And hopefully some of those people move over to Turner. And I would be really excited to see what the production minds at Turner, what they come up with, because I think hockey can take a step here.
No doubt about it. Gary, I wanted to talk to you, obviously, about the Golden Knights and a potential first-round matchup with the Minnesota Wild. But I also want to talk to you about your career. I mean, you were an absolute legend up north of the border in Winnipeg forever. Radio, TV, columnist, everything, TSN. And then all of a sudden, we wake up one day to the huge news that Gary Lawless is going to Vegas to be the insider, my dream job. Didn't know it was available. I don't think it was to anybody but you. How did that all come about? How hard of a decision was it to leave your country to go to Vegas to be the face, the voice of the media for an expansion team?
Yeah, easier for me than it was for my family, my wife and daughter. Just to go back to my career, you know, one of the best compliments I was ever made paid to me was that I was the Mike Russo of Winnipeg. And we did the job a little differently. You know what I mean? You're more of a, I was more of a columnist, more of a, you know, throw a fastball type guy. And but broke a lot of stories and had my finger on the pulse of everything that was happening there. And you are, for my money, the best beat writer in the NHL.
Thanks so much.
And I would say one of the best beat writers. You know, I'd be comfortable saying you're just as good as anybody that covers the NFL, the NBA, or MLB. I don't follow sports well enough to know who the players are, but I would find it hard to believe that anybody covers their market better than you. And I bet you there's a lot of markets that don't get the same coverage that the people here in Minnesota get from you. So
thanks so much.
I was a hockey guy, started in Thunder Bay covering the Colonial Hockey League and the USHL, and then ended up in Winnipeg and did a lot of CFL football there and a lot of American League, International League, American League, and then NHL hockey. And along the way, picked up a radio show and then started doing some television. And TSN came to me at a certain point and said, you know what? We'd like you to be a columnist for us your radio show is already on TSN. You're already doing a ton of TV on TSN. Let's have you in house. So I moved to, so I'd been at the Free Press for about 14 years, and then I moved to TSN, and that relationship lasted about 4 years until I made the move to Vegas. And, you know, it was one of those things. I had a great relationship with George McPhee, and we, you know, just in the course of a conversation one day, it came up, and he just was like, well, would you come to Vegas? And I was like, well, you know, I'd certainly have the conversation. But, and that was me being a negotiator, because as soon as he said it in the back of my head, I was gone.
Yeah.
It was an opportunity to be part of, and I could never have guessed that it was going to be as good as it's been. You know, four trips to the playoffs already, trip to the Stanley Cup. The best you've been there. It's the best atmosphere in the NHL. Like, a Tuesday night in Vegas is better than a Saturday night just about anywhere else in the National Hockey League. And that's not disrespect to other fan bases, because there's lots of great fan bases. It's just the combination of where the rink is, what surrounds the rink, the entertainment factor, that you know, the vision of Bill Foley and Kerry Buchholz and Johnny Greco and the people that he's in Seattle now, and now it's Andrew Abrams and a bunch of really good people on that side of things. And then just the people that they were hiring. They had McPhee, they had McCrimmon, they had Vaughn Carpen. There was talk that they were going to get Bobby Lowe's. They got Bobby Lowe's. Then they hired Gerard Gallant. Now it's Pete DeBoer. Shortly after I got there, they handed me and my boss the files on the other broadcasters, the broadcast positions that were open. I got to be part of putting that team together, and it's second to none. Dave Gosher is one of the best play-by-play guys in the NHL, and Shane Knighty, I think, is the best analyst south of the border. And I actually, my radio partner, Dan Duva, I'll put him up against anyone else in the NHL. I think he's fantastic, and he's going to get a TV job in a big market at some point in time. So it's been great. And then they hired just really cool social media people. Eric Tosi and Alyssa Girardi and Sage Sammons and all those people. And now we've brought in Darren Millard and Stormy Buonantony, and it's just a really deep team of talented people. And
Darren Millard, I loved when you guys brought him in.
Yeah.
You know, well, he's, you know, such
Hockey Night in Canada, big deal in Canada. And, the Rogers mistake was our gain. We were really lucky to be able to bring him in. And watch our broadcast. I think it's second to none.
Yeah. That was one of the coolest things during the 2018 run, is that after the Wild were eliminated, I actually covered you guys because we didn't have a Vegas beat writer yet. Now Jesse Granger's there, does a great job, but they put me on the Golden Knights, and so I got to do a lot of your kind of pregame. It was pretty much like Facebook Live at the time, right? In Winnipeg.
Yeah. So what happens is, after the first round, the TV partner drops off. So we have our broadcasters are all in house. So we've built the studio now in our practice facility, and it's beautiful. So we can do all kinds of streams, and there's other ways to get fans than just on television and radio. And we go after them in that manner.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. You guys just do a great job. Everything from the game ops, which is, as you mentioned, the best in the league. I'm envious every time I go there. The atmosphere, just walking to a game, walking from my hotel into that arena, it gets you up as a beat writer. That's for sure. I can only imagine working for the franchise and being an analyst with you. You mentioned Kelly McCrimmon and George McPhee. One of the coolest things that I did is when I was still at the Star Tribune in 2017, Labor Day, I texted McPhee because I happened to be in Vegas. I'm like, hey, any way you'd sit down with me and do a big story? He's like, yeah, I'm working today. I'm like, you know, it's Labor Day, right? And so I go down to when they were in like Bill Foley's.
Call that 1701.
Yeah.
It's a little office park. Yeah. It's one of his financial, it's part of his financial services empire. Yeah. And that's.
And who is his longtime executive assistant that.
George's?
Was in Washington too.
Katie Bettinger.
Yeah. So Katie and him are the only two working there. Yeah. It's like Labor Day. So it's on a Monday. And I take an Uber down there, and he opens up and he gets locked out of the building. He's like, and he calls up Katie. He's like, I left my key card on my desk. And she comes with it. And we go up to this boardroom and we do this really cool interview. And it was one of the great, one of my favorite stories I wrote at the Star Tribune. It was just me and George McPhee when the Vegas Golden Knights were still just in like a, it was just him and Murray Craven, and I don't even know if Kelly was there yet.
Yeah, Kelly would have been hired. I don't know if he would have started yet.
Before that season that they started doing all the thing. It was just, I don't know, it was such a cool thing. He showed me where the practice facility was going to be and everything.
Well, when Seattle's check cleared last week, I phoned George, and I said, you know, I'm doing my thing on TV tonight, and I want to talk about the difference between, you know, before the check clears and after, because you become a real member of the NHL after the expansion fee is accepted. And George is a really smart guy, and he's thoughtful. He gave it a little bit of a thought, and he goes, well, the difference is you go from being in the embryonic stage to actually being alive.
Yeah. It's real.
Yeah, exactly. It was perfectly put by George.
Yeah, you know what was going on then too is that he was at the office that day because they were just getting like 15 laptops for their scouts, and they were having their scouting meeting starting the next day. And it was just like he was just getting ready. He showed me his whole presentation he was going to show with the scouts. Everything was going to be onboarding the next day. And what was really neat is so that night I'm driving around. I'm walking around Vegas. I walk into the Bellagio and boom, I run into Scott Luce.
Yeah.
Who's the director of amateur scouting with the Vegas Golden Knights, who I covered way back then, who was the Florida Panthers director of amateur scouting. And we sat at the bar at the Bellagio, and he was just talking about his excitement about like, God, if we could just do this and be decent and competitive. And then they go to the Stanley Cup final that year. It was just so cool.
Well, it's funny, you know, when Vegas clinched for the fourth time, you know, I texted George and Kelly and said, when I took this job, I thought this was the first time we'd make it.
Yeah.
Third or fourth.
Yeah.
You know, like George is their draft and develop guys. And you saw if they had this would be a real, you could do this story. If you took every draft pick that they accumulated in their trades, you know, leading up to the expansion draft, if they hadn't have traded any of those picks, you know, hadn't packaged up picks for Pacioretty, for Stone, if you took all those picks and all those prospects and put them and then made the picks, it would be fascinating to see what their roster would look like, what the organizational roster would look like right now, because that was the plan. The plan wasn't to use those picks, to weaponize those picks to get players for now. It was to build this huge prospect pool and then be good in year three or four and then really take off. And instead, you know, because of, you know, some of the deals they were able to make and really Marc-Andre Fleury, I think, kind of at the heart of that, like that, he kind of changed things.
Yeah.
Getting Flower, you know, just sort of took the organization from, it really just changed everything that they were able to do, because his performance that year, you know, he was so good. And, you know, listen, credit to Gerard Gallant and his staff and all those players that performed the way they did. But Marc-Andre Fleury was the backbone of all that.
No doubt about it. It reminded me of when Florida had John Van Beesbrouck, and obviously they didn't make it till year three, but they went to the Stanley Cup final. But Beezer right at the beginning, him and Mark Fitzpatrick, that whole tandem there was just so good in 95, 96, but starting in 1993.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Gary, let me ask you about this Vegas Golden Knights team. Just watching these games against Minnesota, you know, first of all, they're just all exciting. They're back and forth.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to Billy Guerin on the phone about this today. It's like, you know what? We got to learn how to win games like that. Like last night, the Wild didn't protect the puck really well. It was a back and forth game, odd man rushes left and right. But from a Minnesota standpoint, to actually go toe-to-toe in these rush-to-rush games against Vegas, if you're going to play them or Colorado in the playoffs, you better be able to win it, because you're not going to be able to win 2-1 every night in the playoffs against the Vegas Golden Knights. And
Vegas has scored 5 goals or more in more games than any other team in the NHL this year. They can they have offense. Yeah.
And last night, Vegas played really well. Things got a little hairy down the stretch. Obviously, not great goaltending at all from Robin Leonard, but they again showed last night how sometimes against this Minnesota team, there just seems to be this block that for some reason they can't wind up winning the game.
Yeah, it's interesting because that game, I think, was different than all the others. Like that game, I put at the feet of the Golden Knights. I think they lost that game rather than Minnesota had won it. And Minnesota, the other games that they've won this year, they've won those games through, you know, playing real structure, clogging up the middle. They didn't do that last night. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's funny. Late in the second, I said on the radio, I said, who had 6-5 on the bingo card tonight? and I meant the other way around. I thought Vegas was going to win. I thought Minnesota would make a push, but you don't want to blame the goalie for 100% for a loss, but that was Robin Leonard's worst performance since he's joined the Golden Knights. He's only lost 3 regular season games, crazy, I think, since he came over, and 2 against Arizona and now the 1 against Minnesota. There was a weird one last night. And I would think that, you know, the film that when Vegas looked at it today, yeah, they got sloppy at the end, which momentum is just such a big factor. And when Minnesota got it to 5-5, they really, like, I thought, boy, Vegas better get the puck down in their end of the zone and not let them get another shot on goal, because it just felt like a weird one was going to go in. You know what it felt like to me? It felt like the major in San Jose, yeah, in game 7 of 18-19, just the way things just kind of tilted real fast in favor of Minnesota. So I think you're right. I think it'd be some great games. And you saw the nastiness last night. Ryan Hartman started to get under the skin of some of the Golden Knights. Greenway and McNabb were going at it a little bit. And then Eriksson Ek took a run at Peyton Krebs, the rookie playing his first game last night. And then McNabb took a run at Eriksson Ek later on. Foligno got into the mix. So if Ryan Reeves had been in that game last night, it could have been really interesting.
And yeah, Mark Stone said that after the game. So is that what Mark Stone was upset about at the end of the game? A lot of I didn't see it because, you know, when after a game like that, you're just scrambling, sure, to get ready. But apparently Mark Stone was screaming at, and some people thought it was the refs. But then he kind of indicated in his post game that it was about the Wild chirping, and it'll be different when Reeves comes back.
Well, it will be different when Reeves comes back. That's just Mark doesn't have to say that. You and I know that he's the nuclear deterrent, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He's a very different player than anyone else in the NHL. And it's funny, you know, I have seen a couple of teams play a little bigger than they normally do. And I don't think you have to play Ryan Reeves every night in a playoff series, but I'd play him in game 1 and game 2 to set the tone and let everyone know, you know, I bet you the New York Rangers wish they had
Ryan Reeves
in their lineup last night, or that they'd have him available. I think they play again on Wednesday, don't they?
Yeah.
You know, I think Washington and you know, Tom Wilson's not going to be suspended. And the Rangers, they just put a statement saying that they think George Parros is unfit for the office, which I think is preposterous. I'm shocked that the Rangers would put that statement out, because they're not doing themselves any favors.
I sat in George Parros' office 2-3 years ago for a huge athletic story, and he knows what he's doing. The problem with that play is that you'd almost have to be making up a rule to suspend them. I mean,
you can suspend him for being bigger and stronger than Panarin. Yeah. Like the Buchnevich stuff. And listen, I don't like anything about that play, but there's the Wilson and Buchnevich have their thing. And then Panarin jumps on Wilson's back. What does he expect to happen?
Yeah.
Without
his helmet. I mean, that was the thing, you know. My problem with Tom Wilson always is just I feel like he's got this lack of respect for the health of others. But the reality is that if you look at that play individually from a Department of Safety standpoint, you can't, there's no rule that, like, you don't suspend somebody for roughing. It just, unfortunately, you know, it's just a bad situation. But I actually know a lot of those guys at the Department of Player Safety. They're not just sitting there and protecting certain players. I think they
absolutely
would love to
not.
Throw the
no,
book listen, at a guy
like
Tom.
It would be way easier for them to suspend 100%. Tom Wilson today.
100%.
But it wouldn't have been the right thing.
Right. What was I going to ask? Oh, the one thing I did want to tell you is, so during the 2018 playoffs when Ryan Reeves scored the winning goal in that series. Yeah. That was my favorite story that I wrote of that series was just, I got to sit down alone with him after his press conference for a big feature on Ryan Reeves, a Winnipegan. Winnipegger. But it was just, I mean, he is just like, he's one of the greatest interviews around. I mean, he's absolutely hysterical. And I know that any fan of an opposing team is going to hate Ryan Reeves just because of his role. But I think if Wild fans love – if Wild had Ryan Reeves, he'd be the fan favorite on this team.
Oh, for sure. Fan – whatever team he plays for absolutely loves him. And his teammates love him as well. And that was – you know, it's funny that the first time I ever saw Ryan Reeves play hockey was in that rink – I don't know what they call it now, Bell MTS Place, I think.
Yep.
And I saw him play as a high school player. His father, of course, Willard Reeves, you know, one of the greatest CFL running backs ever, played for the Redskins and the Dolphins in the NFL, but really made his mark with Winnipeg in the Canadian Football League. So obviously, you know, Bud Grant had, you know, coached the Blue Bombers to great cups, and Willard came after Bud, but a great franchise, and he stayed in Winnipeg, got a job with as a marshal in the sheriff's service there.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ryan's a Winnipeg guy, goes back there in the summer, and it's he's part of the culture there and part of the fabric, the athletic fabric there. So that, to win, to score that game, score that goal and knock his hometown team out of the playoffs. Pretty big goal.
One of the great interviews he did right after that game was with Scott Oak. Who Scott Oak's son and him, best friends and all that. Before we get to a couple Twitter questions from you, I wanted to ask you about Mark Stone. I had no clue until really seeing him in a Vegas uniform, probably because we don't watch a lot of Ottawa, how good this guy is. I mean, he is just a sensational hockey player.
It's funny that you put it that way because when we traded for Mark Stone, I knew Mark. I was working in Winnipeg when Mark was growing up, and I've known him for a long time and knew about his career in junior and with Team Canada and then with the Senators. And whenever we would play Ottawa or whenever Ottawa would come to Winnipeg prior to that, I'd watch him play a little bit. And I always thought he was a good player. But you watch him for four or five games in a row and you see all the little things he does. And then the hockey IQ, which you can't really pick out just in one game. Like, a bad player will have a good game because the decisions he makes on a certain night will all go his way. A good player who makes the right decisions all the time, that's a great player. And you see that over the span, over, you know, a period of time. And I've come to really think Shane Knight says he's the smartest forward in the National Hockey League, and I wouldn't disagree with that.
Yeah, and Shane was a really smart defenseman too. His Wild fans probably remember when he was here for a very short time, but a really good player. By the way, somebody that's from Minnesota says, I'm an ex-Winnipegger. Ask Gary, are you missing the winters, missing mosquitoes?
I'm not missing the winters, and we still have a summer place up on Lake Winnipeg, so I still get my share of mosquitoes, and I don't like mosquitoes. So,
What was the Italian place that you brought a ton of us writers and broadcasters during the playoffs?
Well, there's two places I've taken.
It's like really modern.
Yeah, that would have been Pizzeria Gusto.
Yeah,
and I've also took you guys to Mona Lisa. Yeah. So a couple of places.
Yeah. My favorite steakhouse is in Winnipeg too. The what's it? It's in the like old Victorian mansion.
Yeah, 529 Wellington. Yeah. It's if you live in Minnesota, it's actually worth the flight to go up there for dinner at 529. They do it right.
It's unbelievable. We went with Ken Weeb and can't remember. It was a broadcaster. It might have been Kenny Albert or somebody. It was good. Pierre LeBrun was there with us. Somebody asked, how does it feel to have Russo's dream job? It's not too inaccurate. Somebody does ask about the Golden Knights game ops. You know, we've written the story to death, but what was the biggest key there? I mean, they basically essentially hired Vegas show producers, right?
To do they hired Johnny Greco, who was working for the WWE, I think, at the time. And he had worked for Kerry Buchholz with the Cavaliers in Cleveland prior to that. And Johnny got hired away from Vegas, went to the Rangers, was there for a little bit, and then joined. Now he's with Seattle. He's he's a senior VP with the Kraken. Bill Foley, I think, really, it started with him in the fact that he said, we're not just going to put on a hockey game. This is Vegas. It's got to be a show. And then, he committed some resources. Like, they spent a lot of money on what they did there.
Yeah.
And then Johnny put together a real good team. Then they hired, the showgirls. They hired the great anthem singer, Carnell Johnson. They hired, they put together the drum line. They got the mask lowered down. They wrote the opening with the knight, pulling the sword out of the stone, all of that good stuff. So it's hard to watch games right now with so few fans in the building. It's even worse in Vegas. You know what I mean? Like they're trying to do that show like they do, but the fans are the absolutely, they're the stars of the show.
Yeah.
Really. It's so funny to watch players from other teams. You know, when it's a TV break, you watch the players and all the actions going on in the rink, and it's all up on the Jumbotron, the Nitron.
Yeah.
The players are watching.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like sit there with their eyes popping out of their heads.
I just love also, it reminds me of LA. You go there, you see celebrities. The first year that Vegas was there, I did a couple features on Daniel Negreanu. And I actually brought him down after a Wild game to meet Bruce Boudreau and Devin Dubnyk, and like all the players were in awe that Daniel Negreanu was outside the locker room. And I just thought it was so cool, like that I was the one that got bring him down. It was just neat. Jenna Christensen, a couple more minutes with Gary here. Jenna Christensen says Knights are great on transition. Seems like partially due to them cherry picking a forward in the neutral zone, or at least leaving early. Will this remain a strength or be exploited in a typically more structured playoffs?
They'll have to make that decision, but it's they leave fast, but they also activate D. Like, Petrangelo and Theodore are at, and Martinez, they're up in the rush all the time. Mm-hmm. And they outman the opposition quite often in transition. So whether or not DeBoer wants them, it's a strength. I wouldn't take it away entirely. Yeah. But I think there's game management. If you're up 2-0 in the third period, you're probably not activating your D, and you're probably not flying the zone.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Get Fiala's line mates, Matthew Coldy, asks, what does Gary think of Kaprizov? Honest opinion.
He's the rookie of the year, and I absolutely hate the discussion that he's not. Guys play in the American League for a number of years, sometimes before they get to the NHL.
College for 4 years.
That doesn't affect their eligibility. So, he turned pro when he was 17.
Yeah.
How old is he now? 24?
Yep.
Yeah. He's not even that old. It's not like he's not Igor Larionov,
mm-hmm.
Who came over after, he was in his 30s, I think, when he arrived. He's a fantastic player, creative, smart, the rough stuff doesn't bother him. And I think he's got a little bit of a sort of the killer's glint in his eye. He likes to, if it's a big moment and it's an opportunity, he likes to be the guy that finishes the opponent off.
Two more for Gary. Would not be a Vegas Knights color analyst insider podcast not ask about Alex Tuch.
Mm-hmm.
Just a highway robbery by George McPhee. I could see where, if you're a GM, you would probably, with the situation the Wild were in, turn your brain into a pretzel. And how do you protect all those people? And I'll be honest, Bill Guerin's having that issue now. He didn't think he was going to, but all of a sudden Dumba's having a good season, and Soucy and Sturm and all these guys that Seattle might potentially take. How big of a coup was that by George McPhee to get Tuch in that deal? And do you know what they would have done if they didn't get Tuch?
Well, the Wild were in a position with all their young defensemen. I think that they were, if they went 7-3, then they were going to have, there was going to be good forwards exposed. If they went 4-4, they were going to be good defensemen exposed. They had an embarrassment of riches of good players. And, those Vegas was hungry to get guys in Tuck's age group, because you know that's you get older guys in expansion draft, and then you draft really young guys in the entry draft, and then you're missing that 21, 22, 23 year old player, mm-hmm. and there's a gap in your organization. So Tuck was all the answers for them, but you must have remembered. Yeah. You'd remember better than me. I seem to recall the name Brodin.
Yeah, well, what they did, I mean, it was basically Brodin, Dumba. They wound up protecting Brodin, but they could have easily done the other way around. But Dumba was exposed. Scandella was exposed. A big thing there that Wild fans might not remember is they did not want to lose Scandella, or they needed a big salary to trade to Buffalo to dump salary too in that deal. And that's actually how they got Foligno. So it was an absolute mess. And Billy Guerin's going through that now. Suddenly you got Talbot and Kakanen, you got to make a decision on. You have Dumba.
To bite the bullet.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know, you're going to lose a player.
That's how
your owner's getting a check for $20 million.
Yeah.
You're losing a player.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yep. Somebody asked, by the way, wink if the Golden Knights are really owned by the mob.
No winking. Bill Foley is not a mobster. One of the most successful entrepreneurs in the United States. And he has, you know, just amassed, he's got restaurants, he's got wineries, but his financial services are his big, you know, title insurance.
Yep.
He owns a whole bunch of title insurance companies. Chances are if you have a title on your home, Bill Foley owns the company that gave you the title.
And that is where we met George McPhee and I. That's one of his title places. Hey, Gary, this was a ton of fun. Hopefully, you don't root in the press box, but I might be rooting for a Minnesota-Vegas series just because I like people might know I like spending some time in Vegas.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
And as I always mention, you can subscribe to The Athletic by going to theathletic.com/straightfromthesource for $3.99 per month. Just so many incredible stories across our platform, but especially in hockey. I'm just constantly blown away by our staff and the stories that we have every single day on our platform. I have like 300 stories right now on my saved stories link on my Athletic app. But we also have just podcasts galore throughout the site. Not only do we have Gary Lawless today, and thanks to Gary for joining, but Katie Strang discusses the latest on Jake Virtanen and the Vancouver Canucks with Jeff Patterson and Thomas Drance on the VanCast. Bill Daly, the deputy commissioner of the NHL, joins Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun on the two-man advantage edition of the Athletic Hockey Edition, Hockey Show. That's Wednesday at the Athletic. And Ned Colletti, the former GM of the LA Dodgers, who's scout for the San Jose Sharks. He spends the full 60 with Craig Custance this week on the Athletic. I have so many questions for this Q&A that my producer, Jeff Domet, might just kill me here. But I'm going to try to breeze through them real quick. So I'm not going to, just to try to get as many as I can get in there, I'm going to basically give quick answers and make it sort of a quick hit mini Q&A. But my favorite Twitter name ever, I say this on every podcast, is Dogfather, Belly Rubs for Pups. I ran into my next door neighbor the other day on the street, and she has a new dog. And I said, anytime you need any dog sitter, come and get me, because I'm a dog guy. But he asks, do you get to hang out with any of the players this year as a media member, or is that a big COVID no-no? If you have hung around the team, can you explain what it feels like, what the room is? Lots of good quotes about being close and playing for each other and what it's like. You know, it is technically a big no-no. I did go on the last road trip. I've been on a lot of road trips lately, but I stayed stayed at the team hotel in Arizona, and I happen to work at the team hotel in LA before. I mentioned, I think, on the last podcast how my the co-founder, Adam Hansman, and Arsena, one of our lawyers at The Athletic, they took me out to the Beverly Hills Hotel, the Polo Lounge, last week. I'm already lying to you, and I said I was going to make this a quick hitter, but now I'm already telling a story. But I, after that lunch, I'm like, do I go back to my hotel, or what do I do before this game? So I went over to the Staples Center, JW, there, and I just worked in the lobby. So I did get to see a lot of Wild players face-to-face, social distancing, masked up during the last trip. And man, I'll tell you, I mean, it's great to be around these guys again. It was great to see these guys again. It was funny. Even some of them were like excited to see me because they haven't seen me in so long. All they do is hear my voice every day on these Zooms. So, you know, it's there's a good feel with this team. They seem to be a close-knit bunch. It was good catching up with a lot of guys face-to-face, especially in Arizona, where I did get to see a bunch of these guys. And as far as the quotes you mentioned, that's the best thing that Billy Guerin did. Screw the fact that all these guys can play. I mean, he just added every player that he added is just in a great quote, from Nick Bonino and Nick Bjugstad to Ian Cole and Marcus Johansson to Cam Talbot. I mean, these guys are just awesome quotes. Nico Sturm, I know that Billy didn't add him. Great quote. We were joking in the press box last night that all our Zoom transcriptions take forever because for the first time ever, the Wild is just quote machine after quote machine, which has been really fun this year and why I can't wait to get in the locker room. Ken Jones, who's in the band 100 Watt Jones. I assume that band's still around, Ken. Hockey is a lot better to cover when it's fun, eh? How glad are you that you're not on deadline with this team? No crap. I cannot believe what the other beat writers are having to deal with that have to file at the gun and constantly rewrite these stories. I get my stories changed too, but I usually have a blank slate when I start my stories, which is why I leave the press box a couple hours after everybody else. I'm walking out of there usually on 1, 2 a.m. After a game writing my articles. But I am so glad that I don't have to file on deadline, have to rewrite stories that you got to file, as we say in the business, at the gun. Ben Hurdle says, after writing the Rossi story, if he gets the all clear at the Olympic site and his dad renting out the rink and his workout routine, you can't rule this kid out for the opening night, knowing that you know about his determination, right? Right, yeah. I mean, a lot will be up to, obviously, Billy Guerin. He might just want him to go to Iowa, but clearly Marco Rossi's coming in committed to try to make this team. And if you don't know what Ben Hurdle was saying, in the middle of this month here, in the month of May, he's going to go to an Olympic park up in Austria, about 6 hours from his house, I believe. And that's where he's going to go see the cardiologist, get a bunch of different doctors' opinions, take a stress test, an EKG, MRI, and that's when he'll hopefully get the all clear to begin ramping up right now. Josh asks, can we expect to see Boldy in the playoffs? If so, whose spot will he most likely take? I think at this point, I think it's fair to say that Boldy's not going to come up and just be, immediately or automatically, I should say, put into the lineup. I think that he'll come up and be part of the Black Aces. And then if they have an injury or need a spark, you have Boldy make his debut, or maybe he will get, a game here at the end of the regular season. But right now they're for the most part healthy. I mean, Johansson's close to returning. They had trouble getting Bjugstad in. So I just don't see that they're going to, just automatically give Boldy a game. And the schedule is weird now that it's been recast here, because the Wild have three off days between games 54, and there are two road games in St. Louis to end the season. And so I really think they're going to have to use those two games in St. Louis, not to rest guys, but to actually tune up for the playoffs and get back in the swing of things. Because, you play May 8th, they're going to have two actual off days and then a practice day, and then they play. And if all of a sudden you just continue to rest guys in games 55 and 56, there are going to be some guys that haven't played in a week and a half by the time the playoffs start. So I don't think we're going to see that, but we'll see in the next little while. Connor says, how much has goaltending increased our team's confidence this year? They're both extremely capable of stopping the puck. Our goalies are each proven enforcer and I'm not sure what the part two means there, but I completely agree with you. I think that this team has a lot of confidence in their goaltending, where maybe it just didn't have that same confidence here the last couple of years, as Devin Dubnyk's game just kind of seemed to disintegrate a little bit the last couple of years. Head scout of the NFL says, who has surprised you the most with their performance down the stretch or even this whole season? I would say Yule Eriksson-Ek. I'll be completely honest. I think I said it in the open. I just never knew that he had this goal scoring in him. And this guy's on a, you know, a 35 goal pace this year. I mean, it's just crazy. And this is something I've publicly said he didn't have the ability to even score 20. So he almost has 20 in a shortened season. So look like a moron there. Not you, me. Johnson from Wisconsin says, would the Wild trade a second for Seattle to take Rask? I guess it's what else you get for that. I don't know why they would take Rask if they could take a Soucy or a Sturm. I think what the Wild are willing to do is do anything in their cost to protect Dumba and Talbot. So we'll see. I do think that there is a definite potential for side deals here. I know that would scare Wild fans after giving up Tuck, but I have a feeling the Wild would be willing to give up draft picks in the second round if it means keeping a Talbot here and maybe a Matt Dumba. But we'll see as we get closer. A lot still to go. Steve Hoagland says, any chance the Wild protects Soucy over Dumba? No. And for Seattle to take Dumba and his $6 million cap hit? No chance. I could just tell you, I mean, I think that Matt Dumba is somebody that is really liked by the coaching staff and by the general manager right now. And I think a lot has changed since October when it looked like an aforementioned thing that Matt Dumba was going to be traded. I think that Billy Guerin wants to figure out a way to make sure that Matt Dumba is not on Seattle next year and maybe even not trading him. I think he likes Matt Dumba on this blue line as a whole. Corey asks, is Talbot regressing back to the norm or has the defense dropped in quality in the last 1 to 2 weeks? Probably a little bit of both. I mean, he goes, Corey says, seems like the goals against has ticked up. That's for sure. He's given up 14 goals in the last three games. He made, as I mentioned in the open, huge saves in the third period. But there's no doubt that Talbot hasn't been the same here the last three games and that he's trying to get his game back on track. But it's also no doubt that their defense the last little while has been very, very shaky. Not even just the defense, but the way they manage the puck has led to a lot of odd man rushes. But you know what? They're winning these games. And these are the games they're going to have to win if they're going to play Vegas or Colorado. I mean, that's the one thing that Wild fans better get used to now is it is going to be back and forth games, 100%. In the playoffs, if you're playing these two teams, because there's just no way to stop that talent from getting offensive chances every single night. Ross, protect Talbot or Kakinen? Tough factoring age. They'll protect Kakinen, I've got to think, but maybe quasi protect Talbot by making sure that they give up a potential pick. Let's see, Laurent, are the Wild planning on signing Philip Johansson? Remember, they have his rights for another year. I think they're just going to continue to evaluate that, but he'll stay in Sweden next year, I'm almost positive. Shmevin Shmiala, the burner account for Kevin Fiala. Boldy expected to play. We just answered that. By the way, that's not really Kevin Fiala's burner account, I don't think. Gene Parmesan, hopefully I'm not mispronouncing your name. I probably am. Where do you predict Alex Hovanov plays next season? Seems like a year in Iowa would be good for him. If you think he's coming to Minnesota after not even being able to play in the KHL pretty much this year and playing in their sort of junior league, no chance. He'll be in Iowa as long as he comes back. Connor, did the Wild have to win a playoff series for this season to be considered a success? Look, I mean, you know, Bill Guerin expects his team to be a cup contender. He wants to win a cup like no other. So if they lose in the first round again, it's going to be very, very disappointing. But the good news about this team is that you see what you have in front of you on the ice and how exciting they are and playing fun hockey. Then you think that they've got Boldy and Rossi and Addison and these guys, Beckman and you know, O'Rourke and Hunt and all these guys coming down the pike. It's just excited for the future. So obviously they want to win. But look, when you're going up against Colorado and Vegas in the first round, if all of a sudden the Wild lose there, I don't think fans should just go completely ballistic and say this year was an absolute disaster. It's a weird season, shortened season. And the one thing that this year has shown me is that the future is bright for this organization. Let me just see a couple more questions because I do have to get out of here. Here, does Dean Evason have a legit shot at the Jack Adams? Gary asks. I think he does. It's up to the broadcasters. The writers don't vote for that one, but they've had a great year. I mean, you know, would the bottom, you know, roasting on the bottom four teams in this crummy division change stuff, change people's opinions compared to other coaches that are maybe doing as good a job, potential? You know, I think that Joel Quenneville is going to be up for the award in Florida. I think Rod Brind'Amour in Carolina, Sheldon Keefe in Toronto. You know, there's a lot of good coaches this year, but I definitely think that Dean Evason has earned his stripes. BSteph12 asks, if you're Seattle, who do you take off the roster? Well, if I assume that they're going to figure out a way to quasi-protect Dumba and Talbot, I'd probably take Soucy off this roster. Michael, if the Wild are healthy, who is the odd man out with a healthy scratch? I would think probably Bukestad, maybe even Parisi or Sturm. It's going to probably come from those three. Let's see. Daniel says, of the prospects not currently in Iowa, who do you see the organization valuing the most? How do you think they'd rank them in order of most likely to make an impact? I would probably think Kuznetdinov, O'Rourke. I kind of want to see what this Nestorenko kid's all about in at BC. You know, Damon Hunt, I know they liked, and obviously Adam Beckman, if I didn't mention him. Nick Braun says, did you expect this out of Kirill Kaprizov? I thought he'd be really good. I didn't think he'd be this good. I'll be honest. He is a true star. He's going to be a star in this league. Jonathan Oliver says, why did the referees not give any explanation as to why goalie interference was not called? Technically, according to Dean Evason after the game, they gave him the explanation that they felt that Talbot engaged with Yarnmark. But when I look at it, there's no doubt that Talbot puts his hand on Yanmark's back, but then he lets go and he's playing his position. And then when Yanmark spun, he clipped Talbot and in my eyes clearly stopped his ability to make the stop. So that is clear goalie interference if the Foligno one knocked out the Carson Soucy goal in Arizona a couple weeks ago. So they should have given Cam Talbot an explanation, but according to Dean Evason after the game, the refs did give him an explanation. Jay Zito, what are the Fiala and Kaprizov contracts going to look like? I would think that Kaprizov's going to be in the 8 range if it's on a long 8-year deal, 7-year deal. I would think Fiala is going to be in the 6 range, probably on a shorter term deal. Kevin Rickvard goes, how the hell did Fiala get a suspension earlier this year while those same morons only fined Wilson $5,000 for the assault last night? My mother asked the same question by the time I woke up today. Now, last question of the show. Melanie goes, how do you feel about all the talk about the Wild finally being fun? Slighted, vindicated? Well, I don't work for the team, so it's no shot at me. But hey, you know what? I don't think it's a slight. I think it's true. Like I've covered this team for 16 years. They've not been very exciting. They're not the most, you know, they've been a pretty blah 16-year existence covering this team out of the 20 that they've played. So I love what I'm seeing. It's fun. It is. I think it's absolutely accurate. So, hey, thanks for everybody for tuning in. Thanks for Gary Lawless for joining. Until next week's show, which might be a very, very, very special show next week. I hope everybody stays safe. And if you're listening to this podcast, check out our comments section for each podcast episode of The Athletic app and rate and subscribe to Straight from the Source on Apple. If you haven't subscribed yet, go to theathletic.com/straightfromthesource and receive a subscription for just $3.99 per month. Good day, everybody.